Hi, this is Justin Wilson, and you need more Front Wing.
Hello and welcome to another More Front Wing podcast. I'm Steph Walcraft, and I can't tell you that I'm always joined by Paul Dalby today because I'm not. I think I'm going to have to change my little intro to say, as usual, joined by Paul Dalby, because he's starting to bail on me lately. There's no Paul this weekend. Instead, I have the great pleasure of being joined once again on the podcast by the editor of IndyCarAdvocate.com and my fellow IndyCar Nation contributor, Zachary Houghton. Zach, good to have you back.
Oh, always great to be back, Steph. Thanks so much.
All right. So Zach and I are going to recap Toronto because we didn't get a chance to do that last week because Paul and I were on vacation. Once again, talking about Paul not being around. I just love the opportunity to pick on him whenever he's not looking. So Zach and I are going to go over some of the major storylines from the Toronto weekend and from the race, and then we'll just recap some of the major news headlines from the last week or so, and we'll do a little quick Edmonton preview as well. So, Zach, I was thinking that maybe a good place to start would be, do you want to play host?
I can try it, absolutely.
Sure,
so,
yeah, I was at the Toronto weekend, of course, all 3 days, and so we were thinking that maybe Zach would ask me some questions that pop into his head about how things went on the ground last weekend. So, Zach?
Absolutely, I was on the ABC broadcast side of things, you know, I was watching from the couch.
Right.
So, you know, what was the view on the ground? I mean, it seemed like even though he'd won 2 races in a row, everyone was still pretty surprised to see Ryan Hunter-Reay get that 3rd one. I mean, what was the overall vibe on the race from the ground view there?
Well, speaking specifically to the Ryan Hunter-Reay issue, it's interesting because out of the blue, they brought him in for a press conference on, I think it was the Thursday during the media day. Might have been the Friday morning, but one of the questions that I had the opportunity to ask him, it was, and this stemmed from the counterpoint that Paul and I did on IndyCar Nation the week before, the topic of which was, is Andretti Autosport back? And Paul took the position that he thought that Andretti was back, and I took the position that I didn't think they were quite there yet. And so while Ryan Hunter-Reay was in the press conference, I asked him, do you think Andretti Autosport is back? And his response before the race win was, no, I don't think so. I think we need to be more consistent and win more races. And I wish that I had had the chance to ask him afterwards, so now what do you think? Because I wonder if the answer would be different. As for the impressions on the ground, I'm going to say I was, considering all of the hurrah that was going into the weekend about how this was sold out and that was sold out and all the metrics were up, I sort of felt like things were maybe about the same. There wasn't as good of a walk-up crowd this weekend as there has been in the past because the weather really didn't cooperate. Friday was like a sauna. Everybody was hiding inside. I went outside at one point to sort of check on how the crowd was looking, and I couldn't find anybody, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's Free Friday and no one's here. What's going on? And then I got to the Direct Energy Center, which is the big sort of conference center that's just outside of the Front Street, and it was packed. Everyone was in there because it was air conditioned and there was food and there was drink and there were a couple of the support series paddocks were in there and people were looking around at those as well. And it was just so hot that people couldn't bear to be walking around outside on Friday. So it was kind of a write-off. And then Saturday, they were calling for rain. You'll recall there was a pretty heavy rainstorm first thing in the morning on Saturday. And the rain never did come back around. But I think that early sort of gloom and doom was enough to turn a lot of people away. Sunday was a beautiful day. Sunday was just about the best day that you could ask for a race day. And I never did get to actually walk around the grounds, but from what I saw on pit lane and on the front stretch, those grandstands looked pretty full. But they've been about as full for the last couple of years. So that really didn't surprise me that much. One thing I can mention that I think may have also been a bit of a crowd deterrent that I think that the promoter really made a huge mistake on was they had this great thing to lead into the weekend on, which was that for the first time for this event or anywhere in Ontario, they had a license that would allow people to buy beer or other alcoholic beverages and just walk around with them. They didn't have to. It used to be that you had to, if you had a beer, you had to be penned into the beer garden and you couldn't leave the beer garden with your drink. And so that was great. And people were all excited about that kind of heading into the weekend thinking, oh, this is awesome. We can buy a beer and walk around. But the problem is when you got there, if you wanted a place to sit down and have a drink with your buddies, there was nothing. They took out all of the beer gardens and just didn't replace them with anything. There were no tables and chairs or anything. So if you wanted to just buy a beer and have a place to sit and watch cars go by, there was nothing. And the culture in this city of attending the race really doesn't accommodate that. You need to have that place to just sort of sit and socialize. That's a big part of what goes on at the race weekend here. So I think that was, there may have been some people that showed up earlier, particularly maybe on Free Friday, took a look around and went, oh, this is gonna how it's going to be? Well, I don't know. I don't know if this is worth coming back on Sunday. I can just watch it on my couch. So that's something that I think Green Savory has to go back and take a really, really good look at next year when they're deciding what to do in terms of the event. But certainly the city was all James Hinchcliffe all the time. Leading up to the week,
yeah.
He had a lot of support from the media. There were ads with his face on them everywhere, and he kept saying, this is so weird. Walking around his home city, seeing himself everywhere he went. He was every time you caught him talking to somebody, he was saying, this is really weird. I can't handle this. Yeah, it was really great to see all the support that he got, and then just as equally heartbreaking when he left the race early, unfortunately. But we'll get to talking about that later on. Anyway, I've talked long enough. Do you have another question for me, Zach?
Yeah. Let's go to our second place finisher, Charlie Kimball. Wow, that was pretty neat. You know, earlier this year, I kind of got the sense that Charlie he seemed a little more at ease with himself. Do you get a chance to observe him at all? But, you know, he had a heck of a drive out there, and you know, a really, really kind of an exclamation point on. He's had an okay season up to this point. He's certainly shown some improvement, I think. But wow, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, going back to talking about the press conference, I was really impressed with him in the post race press conference because he was such a class act about it all. He was mm-hmm. Because he really did outdo himself this weekend. And one of the things that came up was, you know, you've had people questioning whether you're really deserving of this ride. And does this sort of feel like a little bit of a vindication for you? I can't recall exactly what his response to that was, but it was, I mean, you could feel the sense of relief from him at getting some results, but it was relief because it was an expectation that he had put on himself. And and he was just meeting that. He didn't feel you didn't get this sense from him that he was super excited and yay, look at what I've achieved. It was okay, I've met this goal, now it's time to head for the next one. And all of his responses in the press conference had that sort of tone to them. Just this sort of this is a checkpoint that I've met, and now I'm ready to move on to the next one. And what was the quote that he said? It was a really good one. He said, the best win is the next one.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And one other thing about Charlie, just while we're talking about him, one of the people in the conference who asked him a question identified himself as having type 2 diabetes. And obviously Charlie answered his question very graciously, but as he was leaving the room, he went out of his way to go and find the guy and say hello to him directly and give him a handshake. Because of that diabetes connection. And I thought, wow, that is classy.
Is cool.
Yeah, I was
impressed with him. Yeah, I was going to say, you know, we talked about Charlie and Hinch, and it's interesting that right now, if you're just flipping randomly on TV, what are the two drivers you're most likely to see out there, you know?
That's right.
And, yeah, you know, Charlie's doing a really good job with it. So
yeah, they're representing the series extremely well. No question.
Oh, Absolutely. Well, I did have one more on Toronto from the ground eye view and everything. You know, we've talked a little bit about the attendance and some of the policy, and hopefully there's some lessons learned there and everything. You know, was there someone who just really seemed off their game to you as far as just all weekend, just didn't seem to have it? You know, sometimes when you hang around enough, you get that sense for someone who's just not in the zone. You know, they're just missing more than they're hitting. You know, I've noticed that sometimes you've got a driver who, boy, they are just not in a good place right now. Was there any sense of that for anyone?
Dario.
Yeah.
Which is a bizarre thing to say about the pole sitter. But
isn't that weird?
Yeah, but no, he's always had a bit of a and I couldn't be any more direct with this, but he's always has a bit of a whiner reputation.
Sure.
But he's not a happy camper this year. No, and that actually leads a little bit into one of the other topics I was going to address, and now is as good a time to do that as any. He was one of the drivers that I saw taking pretty subtle but direct pot shots at race control when he had the opportunity to discuss matters, and that there were other drivers who were doing the same thing. You kind of get the sense right now that there's not a lot of happiness between the paddock and Bo Farfield and the race control team right now. There's a lot of tension there. And nobody's really talking about it, which is bizarre. But there's a lot more dissent than people on the outside have been led to believe. And this is the first race weekend that I've been fully able to dedicate my attention to while working for this season. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. But if you're looking at it from the outside, you just don't see it because it's really not coming up. But there's a lot of there's a little bit of sniping and a lot of defensiveness right now in that whole relationship. So no matter what Robin Miller tells you, all is not rosy behind the scenes. So keep an eye on things, definitely.
Interesting. Yeah, we'll have to see how that plays out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hopefully there's no New Hampshire this year to
yeah.
really get the fire going. Hopefully we can at least avoid, you know, open revolt in the warfare. So,
I'm gonna share a conversation here that I probably shouldn't share because I wasn't really party to it and I just kind of overheard it, but it was too interesting to leave under wraps. I overheard someone who had a conversation with Brian Barnhart. After the Milwaukee weekend when Scott Dixon took that really awful penalty.
Oh, yeah.
And he said that Brian told him, if that had been me and not Bo, I wouldn't have left there alive.
Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah, you can imagine the Robin Miller's mailbag. I think there's some truth in that. I mean, at that point, it was just...
It's a good point. It's a very good point. And
I can't argue with him.
No, and you know, it's hard to deny that Bo Barfield is probably getting some free passes from certain corners because he's new or because
sure.
he's got friends in different places or any number of various reasons. But there are starting to be more questions asked, and you're starting to hear more drivers say, "I'm going to have to talk to Bo about this because I don't think this is right," and la 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 la. It's definitely something to watch because the tone is starting to shift from where it was at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, well, the honeymoon period might just be about over there. Then, you know, we might
yeah.
start seeing a little bit more of that. But, you know, hey, race director, you're going to get some of that, you know, some. I don't know that any race director alive has ever...
No, that's right. And Bo has said to us, when he talked to us before the, or just after the Iowa race, said to us, you know, he feels
mm-hmm.
like he's on target and he's not here to make friends.
Sure,
He thinks that he's pretty well at where he expected to be at this point in the season. So, yeah, it's that's not surprising either. Nobody's expecting it to be all sunshine and rainbows all the time, but... It's something to watch, anyway.
Absolutely.
So let's walk our way through sort of the major talking points from the race. First of all, can you believe they made it through turn three on lap one without anybody touching?
I held my breath.
A little bit of touching, but there were no race-ending incidents. I couldn't believe it. I was watching on TV because they went in there like too wide. Many of them were still too wide, even from coming down that entire extremely long back straight. And I saw them too wide into turn three, and I went, guys, turn three doesn't work that way. But then it did.
it was a very pleasant surprise. I think that's one thing that almost every race preview before Toronto picked up on, that, you know, they treated turn three like, you know, where, you know, race dreams go to die. I mean, it was, and you know, there's after last year's race, you have to say, somehow, I'm not sure that all the laws of physics were followed, but they got through it. And then you sort of thought, okay, lap two. And then after a few laps, it's like, well, okay, all right, I guess we're not going to have mass carnage in turn three.
Well,
all right.
not in the beginning anyway. But that,
and that was, I was okay with, you know, that was enough for me.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. It wasn't the first lap. You know, later on, obviously, we had the interesting, quote-unquote, ending there. But
Well, but that's the thing, is that not only were there not horrible and boneheaded incidents in Turn 3 in the beginning there, but there was still good racing. And it was still a heck of a lot of fun to watch. And there were a lot of really great stories going on sort of in the background too. I won't spend any time on it here because I outlined it pretty well in my my Toronto post race thoughts, which you can find it on the site at morefrontwing.com. But following the saga of Simon Pagenaud's race on the radio was very interesting. So if that sort of thing interests you, do go find that post and check it out. But it was just a whole lot of fun to watch that race right up until the end. And there was a lot of good stuff going on. Sad to see Simona out so early. That was another one that was an interesting one to follow on the radio, because she figured out pretty quickly that engine was not working the way it was supposed to. So they kind of parked themselves, unfortunately. Mm. Another one was Hinch, obviously. I got to talk about that because that was just heartbreaking. I was on assignment not only for Morefront Wing but also for the Toronto Star that last weekend. So I was naturally parked behind Hinch's pit because I was under strict instructions to, if anything happens to James Hinchcliffe, you be there. So there I was, and you saw the cowling come off the engine and the cowling go back on, and then they fire it up, and then the cowling comes off again. And the whole time, James is sitting in the car. I swear, it felt like a lot longer, but it was probably a span of 5 minutes. I swear, he only moved twice. He just sat there and, like, stared forward, wasn't looking around, wasn't looking at anything. And then when he finally got told to get out of the car and pulled his helmet off, he was on the edge of tears. He was so disappointed and let down, and he had such a great big group of people there supporting him. They had banners and signs all in the grandstands behind his pit. They had one of the local motorsport organizations had gathered a bunch of fans together in the H section, which happened to be the section right behind his pit, to all sit together to be a cheering section for him, and the whole section just kind of went, It was great to see, because it's great, really great, that the city of Toronto is getting invested in James, because, I mean, that's the future of the sport right there. But on the other hand, it was really heartbreaking to see him so emotional and so let down after such a huge build-up and all the support that he had seen for the whole week before.
Yeah, on the other side of that too, though, how awesome is it to have that? You know, to have that home race and to have that guy who's out there really backed by the fans. And, you know, that's something neat that not all courses offer. You know, that's really awesome to see. I wish it had had a better ending, because that would have been one of the best stories of the year, hands down, if not the best story. But, you know, there's next year. I don't think Hinch is going anywhere anytime soon. So hopefully they're back with plenty more support. It's that would have been nice if he would have pulled it off, though.
I think someday he will. And I'm telling you, the roof is going to blow off the place when it happens. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, it'll be quite the day. So here's another topic. This unfortunately brings us back around to race control, and I don't want to spend the entire time talking about this, but that penalty to Tony Kanaan for hitting the pit equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but haven't there been similar incidents of drivers hitting pit equipment in other races this year that weren't penalized?
Yes. There have. And, you know, it's one thing that I actually noted and never went back to review after the race. To me, it looked like the tire wasn't too far out or anything. I thought it was justified, but I do know we've had times where, you know, we've had that be a non-incident for whatever reason. And I'm trying to think... I don't
remember if it was at Long Beach, but I know there was one with Simon Pagenaud where I remember seeing it and thinking, how was that not a penalty?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was at Long Beach.
You know, and usually if that's not called a penalty, then usually it's because it was too far out or, you know, something like that where they can at least cast some sort of doubt on it being the fault of the driver.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, that's something I'm going to have to go back and review, as I meant to. It's a very good question and something that everyone wants to make sure is being adjudicated consistently. Because there's that
evil C word that has been such a prominent one in IndyCar racing for the last couple of years.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, with that... If we're going to go on race control for one more, what did you think of the pits closed with Will Power? That was interesting.
That was a big deal. And I never did hear what the justification was for doing that. I know that Graham's incident was sort of in turn one.
Mm-hmm.
But the last that I ever heard about it was drivers saying, we're going to have to ask Bo why he did that, because we don't know what the reasoning was.
I believe Bo said that it was just something with track positioning where Will had already gone past on one point, and so they couldn't bring everyone, or I can't remember. But it was something with the track positioning on there. But, yeah, that's another one where it's kind of a question mark for the fans. And certainly with the way some of the race strategies played out, it was a very interesting note in the race.
Well,
so.
One thing that would be great to see more of from within the IndyCar ranks is Bo being offered up to give some explanations, not an accusatory sort of put him on the stand kind of way, but just because fans have questions and we're more than willing to believe that there are perfectly good answers for them. We'd just like to know what they are.
Absolutely. And you know, IndyCar has been really good in some instances of conveying right away what's going on. And other times, you know, we're still not there 100%. I think it's better than it was, but certainly there's room for improvement in that. And, you know, we're in an era where fans want information. I mean, it's just when you're following a race, there is an awful lot to keep track of. And when you're saying, wait, where did Will Power go? Why is he, you know,
mm-hmm.
when you have that question, it's nice to have that, you know, that brief explanation right now. And okay, we can revisit this later. But, you know, that's something that probably still needs to be worked on a little bit. Although I will say that I think with some of the penalties, they've done a pretty good job of at least mentioning on the broadcasts that it's under review, which I find very useful, because usually you have that moment of indignance, you know, you're very indignant for a moment, like, oh, what happened there? Like the Pagenaud incident with Newgarden and everything. You know, if you were on Twitter at that point, it became a howling, furious mob within about 3 seconds. You know, everybody wanted to know, are they reviewing it? Is that going to be a penalty? And, you know, fortunately they did, I think they mentioned that they were reviewing that and everything, and Pags ended up with a, you know, the time penalty there. So, which is something else to probably discuss there with New Garden. So.
Well, let's hop into talking about the end of the race, because after the New Garden and the Pagano incident. You know, I never actually did get to see that again. That was one thing that was one incident that I should have reviewed, because I didn't get a good look at it from pit lane. I know Simon was acting quite indignant after the fact, but I mean, what driver doesn't?
It's the MO. It's you know, you can go back to Newgarden a couple weeks ago when he had acted like, with his accident, and acting like nothing had ever happened. You know, Will Power and EJ Visa, same thing, and then Will owned up to it, which was cool. So, that was. That kind of set off the whole chain reaction, didn't it? It seemed like we'd had a pretty smooth race, and then all of a sudden, all these images of cars running into each other, coming to a stop. You know, I expected to see like a flash frame of locusts descending on a field, and it was almost like one of those early movies where they show flying machines that didn't work. You know, that's the last part of that race felt like to me. Because they showed the whole Pagano Newgarden thing, and then a minute later, oh, okay, who's stopped now? Oh man, who's turned around? And people are shuffling up and everything, and it just seemed like within a span of what seemed like 5 seconds, they flashed to three separate incidents on there, and you expected it to start raining frogs or something. I mean, it was just like the cataclysm had come at the end of the race after what had been an amazing race, and then of course. Obviously ending under another yellow, which probably brings up the biggest rules question or rules discussion of the week.
Let's not jump quite that far yet. Let's go back to the late race incidents, because there was an explanation given by two of the drivers that were brought in post-race that I really haven't seen discussed a whole lot since then. But they both made a really valid point. In that when they were forced to line up too wide for the restart at the end of the race, the marbles hadn't been swept.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody's tires got all dirtied up with marbles, and all of a sudden it was like they were driving on ice.
Yeah. That's a very good point. That really got almost no airplay whatsoever.
It really didn't, and that's a legitimate gripe on the driver's side of things. And Charlie Kimball made the suggestion, and I thought it was a valid one, that with a certain number of laps to go, maybe they need to consider that if there's not time to sweep, that they have to do single-file restarts.
You know, I don't think that would give anyone too much heartburn if they're going to do that. But then again, I don't know.
If your choice is between getting a restart before the end of the race or finishing under yellow because there's no time because they can't sweep, which one do you choose?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think if you're compressed for time like that, then certainly a single file restart is. I mean, it's not as if they can't pass. We've seen plenty of passing.
Mm-hmm.
File restarts. It's not as if that consigns everyone to stay exactly where they are. There's still the potential for gain or loss. So, I think I'd be personally okay with that. But I do think that's something that probably needs to be looked at. Whether that was just one of those things, or if hopefully it doesn't happen again. But if it does, you know, hopefully they have that in mind and can address it properly before we go back to green. So.
Yeah. All right. So then finally the race did end under yellow, and the IndyCar universe exploded. I'll tell you what happened where I was sitting, which was, it took me a couple minutes to get up there. I wasn't there exactly when the flag fell, but when I was in the media center post-race, everyone around me was saying, I can't believe IndyCar doesn't have green-white checker. They need to put in green-white checker. This is terrible. How can they end a race under yellow? These fans pay good money for these tickets, and now they have a yellow flag finish. And I'm sitting there going, what planet am I on? I don't know a single person within IndyCar who actually thinks this is a good idea. Who are these people? I know who they are. I work with some of them, and I've known some of them for a long time. But I can't, like, if you're not a fervent IndyCar fan, like if you spend any amount of time following other forms of motorsport, apparently finishing under yellow is like the most egregious travesty of all time.
I was surprised at the amount of, well, not a large amount, but let's just say a vocal amount of people who seemed immensely chagrined that two races in a row in IndyCar had the sheer effrontery to end under yellow.
So?
As if it had never happened before.
Racing
as if,
does. That's
I mean, I don't know if they wrote their congressman or if they demanded a full refund or I have no idea, but I don't know. I mean, I stopped expecting everything to be a stunning last-minute finish. You know, not every race ends like that. It just doesn't. And it's, you know, we've had some amazing races. That I guess my analogy was, to cut over to this for a moment, I can go to a baseball game, and just because it doesn't end, you know, with a walk-off home run doesn't mean it wasn't a great game. I can go to a football game, and just because the home team takes a knee in the last minute to run out the clock doesn't mean I didn't have a great time.
Mm-hmm.
For me, you can have an amazing race, and it can still end under yellow. It's just one of those things.
I don't even especially care if it's not an amazing race so much as if the competition has been fair.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I mean, you're going to have some yawners. I mean, that is the essence of motorsport. Well, it's not the essence, but it's a fact of motorsport that not every race is going to be a stunner. And you can load your car, you can load your race weekend up with as many little tricks and trinkets as you want, but that's not going to guarantee you on-track action. The most you can do is adjudicate fairly, hope you have a good formula that encourages competition, and, you know, see how things play out. I mean, that's why we race. We don't race to, I guess, engender some, I'm trying to think of the right words here.
Mm-hmm.
We don't play towards some stunning finish every time. We don't want to engineer towards that.
Yes.
We want to step back and let that happen.
Right.
And I guess that's the philosophy I'm coming from. But certainly, if there was ever a time to use the term crap storm, I would say the reaction on Twitter and across the IndyCar universe for someone suggesting that there should be a green-white checkered was instantaneous. And I found myself part of the angry mob. I grabbed my pitchfork and torch the same as anyone else. So I will admit to that, to just being just repelled by the idea. So I can't claim any sort of impartiality there, although I certainly appreciate and respect the opinions of some of the people who were calling for that. I can't share that opinion.
No, and I'm with you. I completely think that it's the most terrible and race-ruining idea that anybody could possibly come up with. But the problem is that, you know, there are people apparently who want this, and
sure.
How do we please those people? Because it's not a big secret that we need to bring more people in right now. And so if this is something that would work, does that mean that IndyCar is forced to consider it?
Well, you know, and I read, I know you and Paul had your point counterpoint on IndyCar Nation, which was where you guys kind of took sides on that and
yeah.
Your point of entertainment of the race. I can certainly sympathize with that idea that people want to entertain folks on the race and everything. But I think from my standpoint, I just don't see that being something that's going to bring in the masses more than when you have multiple polls online that are saying 90% of your hardcores are against something. If it was 50-50, maybe. But we're talking about something that has brought more rage with it than talking about the lucky dog, you know, or something like that. So to me, I understand the entertainment thing, but you are, to me, losing so much possibly of what your current fans enjoy about some of these things, such as you're probably adversely impacting race strategy to a point.
Oh, not to a point. That I mean,
yeah.
You're blatantly
impacting
race strategy.
Absolutely. Yeah, I didn't want to go too severe with it, but yes, you're right. And I think you're also, you want to talk about complaints about car costs?
Yeah.
We've seen some of the restarts, both in NASCAR and IndyCar.
Well, look at this weekend.
What
happened with the late race restarts. That's going to happen every time you try to do a green-white checkered. You're never actually going to get the thing to finish under
how
green.
Many do you want? Yes, and speaking of never finishing, how many races do we want to end up on ESPN Bulgaria or whatever the race ended up on? I mean, I was blindly searching for, you know, there's been races where we go over and I'm trying to find the race. Okay, is it on ESPN News? No. Okay, well, I think it's on a small Albanian television sports station or something. You know, I have no idea where the race went at that point.
Yeah.
Think about extending those races already where we're already on a tight TV window.
Yeah.
You know, from that standpoint, from an attrition standpoint, and from a strategy standpoint, where I think a lot of IndyCar fans, especially on the street and road courses, oh, well, yes, and the ovals, too, appreciate fuel strategy and appreciate, you know, stretching and fuel mileage, which is a big part of Chevy versus Honda this year, let's not forget. And I really think that you would be sacrificing an awful lot for something that's, A, immensely unpopular with your existing fans, and, B, doesn't really give you any sort of there's no guarantee that's going to bring anyone in the door where, oh, well, it's a green, white, checkered now. Well, you know, okay, I'm sold, you know. I just don't know that it's that big of a, you know, sell.
Well, thank you for saying all the things that I wasn't allowed to say because I wasn't on the no side.
Well, I understand. You got to take it. And you know what? I think there's some, I don't want to, you know, denigrate anyone who's taking that side of things because there are different forms of racing, and some people enjoy other, you know, different strokes for different folks and all that. But I really don't think it has a place in IndyCar, would be my final word on it, I guess.
And I think that the vast majority of the existing fan base will agree with you. The question becomes how many people out there wouldn't, and that is up to IndyCar to do their research and figure that out for themselves, I think, and weigh those options very carefully, because there's no question that it's going to leave a bad taste in the mouths of quite a large percentage of the existing fan base. So the positive needs to outweigh the negative.
Absolutely. I was heartened that Bill Barfield on Twitter the other night did say that he was definitely, you know, seemed to be leaning against it as far as his personal opinion. Now his professional, I know professionally he needs to evaluate everything, but I certainly think that, you know, in a perfect world, this never would have come up, but
yeah.
In a perfect world, I don't think he's a fan of that in any sense, so.
Well, it's certainly not where his background comes from, so.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Certainly not.
No. All right, let's change topics a little bit here and talk about the resignation of Mark Koretsky. That was a little bit out of left field, wasn't it?
It was, and most IndyCar fans would say, who? You know, it was one of those things. It wasn't like a Brian Barnhart or a Randy Bernard or a Tony George to the fans. It wasn't, I think, that level of visibility. But it still is interesting. What was your take? Did you? Very few people I've spoken to actually had any interactions with Mark Koretsky.
Well,
did
it's funny you should say that because he was being paraded around in front of press conferences as recently as the Thursday before the Toronto race.
Oh wow!
Yeah, because he was in the introduction press conference for the media day tour, and he was, I got to tell you, pretty enthusiastic and doing a pretty good job of the sales pitch. So. I thought that was my first interaction with him, my first time ever actually seeing the guy in person, but I haven't been in a lot of races this year. So I found that to be very interesting. It was quite recent before that announcement was made that he was representing IndyCar in a pretty big way. So interesting.
Yeah, that is. And I think the reactions we've seen go from just general puzzlement to the general elaborate conspiracy theories we to sort of just I don't know what happened. You know, there's a sense that something wasn't working there for them. So it's, gosh,
well,
who knows?
Yeah, it's one of those situations, too, where they're not rushing to fill the position. They've sort of taken all the duties they said and given them to other people on the staff. So.
Mm-hmm.
That tends to give you the impression that maybe the position wasn't as necessary as one might have thought. So,
absolutely.
Yeah.
It is. it is going to be a puzzler for a while. I guess maybe we'll see something come out down the road on it, or maybe the pieces will come in. But right now, it's just kind of a side note to a point with everything that's gone on this year.
Yeah. Well, it's been an interesting year, particularly off the track, hasn't it?
Absolutely.
So, here's an interesting little factoid that you can take to Edmonton with you this weekend, Zach. Did you realize that Chevrolet can actually lock up the manufacturer's point standings this weekend with a win?
Oh, my goodness. You know, I was reviewing the other night, and they've definitely had the advantage this year. You know what else is interesting is they've won every event sponsored by Honda this year.
Ah, that is funny.
Talking about taking it to the competition. So,
yeah.
Of course, Honda won Chevy's one sponsored event, so, you know, go figure there. So,
right.
That is interesting, though. Chevy
that is, yeah.
Been,
and it's funny, because it hasn't been something that's really been talked about. We were granted that lovely little piece of information from a gentleman named Russ Thompson, who does the statistics for the television broadcasts, and has been in touch with Paul and I off and on throughout the season. So we want to give Russ a shout out and a thank you for that. But yeah, it's really funny how it really hasn't made any of the discussion points coming out of IndyCar, and I'm not sure why that is. You'd think that would be something they would think would be a pretty big deal to talk about.
That would be a big brag if I were an engine company.
Yeah,
you know, I would think your first year back in the series, and you have just I think part of the thing maybe it hasn't felt like domination, at least not to me. I mean,
well,
certainly those first few races,
500 was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of mitigated some of the bragging rights because that is still the crown jewel. Yeah, you know, Chevy's up, what, 7-3, but in terms of races won, but God, oh my gosh, I guess you're right. But yeah, it hasn't felt like one manufacturer is running away with it, but when you look at the number of races won and just how things have shaken out, Chevy is really doing an excellent job this year.
Yeah, and
so Honda has had their moments.
They have. Given the layout of the Edmonton track, we may find that this is one where Honda has an advantage. Honda has done better on the tracks that have sort of the longer straights.
Absolutely.
So they may hang on to fight another day, but if they don't have it clinched by Chevy after this weekend, I think that Mid-Ohio should pretty much tie it up.
Yeah, absolutely. And you make a good point. This should be a track conducive to Honda success, you would think, with the long straights that the airport course offers. But we'll see. It has been back and forth this year. And I guess the nice thing is it's never really felt like Honda can't win a race or Chevy can't win a race, because there's been several, such as Long Beach, where it very easily could have gone the other way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
Long Beach is a great example. That was very, very close to being a Honda winner.
One more lap or Sato not on track where he was, and we're talking about Simone Pagenaud in victory circle instead. So it's been close, and I think that's encouraging, even if Chevy does take it this weekend. Certainly, if I'm a Honda team, I don't feel hopeless. I don't feel like I can't be right up front. It's just and how things have shaken out. So,
right. Okay, well, I suppose we should spend just a quick minute on the state of the championship point standings, because did you think that Ryan Hunter-Reay was going to be leading the point standings? Let me put that to you differently. If somebody had gone to you, Zach, at the beginning of May and said, hey, you know what? I know Will Power is leading the points right now, and he's just won the last three races in a row, but by the time we're done Toronto, he's not going to be leading the points anymore. It's going to be Ryan Hunter-Reay. What would you have said to that person? Would you have had them committed on the spot? Because I would have.
I probably would have nodded politely and started backing away, looking for any available exits. It is surprising. And, you know, it's not that I don't think any of us thought Ryan couldn't win a race. But three in a row? Come on. This is not this guy's M.O.
Yeah.
He's been the guy who can win races for you, but he's just as likely the next week to come back and finish 17th or something. He has not had that consistency that we've seen from some of our previous championship contenders. I was very surprised. I was at Milwaukee when he won, and I thought, well, okay, that's awesome, you know, home win for Andretti and everything. And then you go to Iowa, and he manages to win there, and you think, okay, well, yeah, but we're coming back to the street courses, so...
Well, not only that, but Andretti has shown very well at Iowa for the past couple of years. There's just something about that track that they've got figured out. So that made it not so surprising as well.
Yeah, that was not a reach by any sense of the imagination. That was not a surprise on par with Justin Wilson winning at Texas or anything. You know, Marco finished well at Iowa as well again. So, but Toronto, wow. And then, you know, Ryan has done well at Toronto in the past, but we're talking about three in a row. That is some consistency that we have not previously seen out of him. So I am very pleasantly surprised to have a great championship battle on our hands. I don't know that any of us thought we'd still have really seven-ish drivers still somewhat in contention for this thing at this point.
Yeah.
Which is phenomenal. I mean, really, it was quite a surprise to me as well. I'm sure it was a surprise to you.
Mm-hmm. It was. And it's a little bit luck falling his way. I mean, there have been a couple of times when it could have been somebody else, and, you know, the strategy just works out right. But that's how racing goes, right? It'll be the real story will be following for the next five races to see if he's managing to keep it up.
Right, right. Yeah. And what's fun for me with this points battle is it's not a two-man race this year. It's still very easily in range for guys who we thought, okay, they'll do okay this year. But, of course, Scott Dixon's still in the mix.
Mm-hmm. Elio is up there, too.
Elio is leading in laps led this year, which after the sort of punting season he had in 2011 is phenomenal for him. You haven't heard much of him since the opening race, but he's been remarkably consistent this year.
He's talking about his championship. When he was talking to the media on the Friday, I think it was, they brought him in, or it might have been the Thursday. What he kept saying to people over and over is I'm within reach for this championship that I've been dreaming of.
Mm-hmm. And that really is. That's the last thing on that checklist. I mean, you can talk about winning another at Indy and everything, but, you know, he's got his three there. He's been very close before to winning a championship, but this is as good a shot as he's had in a long time. He's consistent, which we have seen some of the other drivers have their ups and downs this year. So, hey, I mean, going into Fontana, if he's close.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, Fontana is pretty much tailor-made for him.
Oh, absolutely. So I really think this could really, we're down to the point where between the four we've already mentioned and then kind of those guys who haven't won anything but are still up there, Hinch, TK, and Pagenaud, are still within relative striking distance. You know, a win here or there or a really bad finish by somebody in front of you, and that whole landscape can just shuffle just like that. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Okay, Zach, you're on your way to Edmonton. As of when this goes, this podcast goes live, you'll be on a plane. Tell us what you're expecting to see and what you're looking for this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Well, first I'll be looking to make it through O'Hare Airport alive.
Oh, good luck with that.
That's my connecting flight. So assuming I get through that okay, we'll concentrate on Edmonton. So, yeah, I'm getting in Friday afternoon, so... I'll be covering some of the two-star Mazda races, the Indy Lights race, and, of course, the main IndyCar event for the weekend. So I've not been to Edmonton before, so it's going to be a pretty interesting trip just to see how that, how the course looks and all the stuff for Race Week Edmonton, because it is a pretty well-supported community event in Edmonton is what I've learned through making my arrangements to go there. So
yes, it is, very much so. Hey, you know that you've got James Hinchcliffe and Alex Tagliani to watch as sort of the Canadian hopefuls in IndyCar. Did you know that there's an Edmonton local racing in Star Mazda this weekend?
Absolutely. Stefan
Rezinski.
I can never say his name. I actually had him on my site the other day. That's sort of why I did Razzle Dazzles is nicknamed
Razzle Dazzle.
Driver, so.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit easier. But yeah, Steph's an awesome story. You know, he has this entire Powered by Alberta initiative that he does for sponsorship, working really hard to make something happen. He actually ran lights at Edmonton last year and kind of took a step to Star Mazda this year. And even though he's missed the ovals, he's sitting in, I believe, 12th place in the standings in front of guys who've raced everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very close to moving up. So he's a cool story, and really just helped me with some of the preview stuff for Edmonton this week. That's on IndyCarAdvocate.com if people want to check it out. But certainly he's going to be the local star there that week. So with Star Mazda doing two races, hopefully he finds something and gets that car towards the top. So.
Absolutely. All right, Zach, who you got?
Oh boy, are we going pole or a race winner here?
Let's just stick to the race win. I don't like to branch out too much and make myself more wrong.
Oh my gosh, we can't do worse. Did Paul tell you? We got to tell a story on Paul here and myself.
No.
Just quickly. For IndyCar Nation, you know, we do the locks, drops, and sleepers, right? Mm-hmm. Along with Chris Estrada from Indy Racing Revolution, who I know you guys have had on here as well. We all picked Mike Conway as our drop for Toronto.
Yeah.
So you're welcome, Mike Conway. Apparently he read our column and got really angry and decided to do something he hasn't done at all this year, basically, which is run extremely well and grab a podium. So
that's hilarious.
Yeah, so I'm not going to pick Mike Conway this week, just out of spite, making us all look like idiots. You know, I still like Will Power for this. I don't think I've heard the arguments that he's going to be inconsistent now that he's not in the lead and it's late in the season and everything. But let's not kid ourselves. This thing is not over yet. Will can very easily do what he's done twice at Edmonton before, and that's win. We know how good he is on here. So who do you have?
Well, I'm going to take the other guy with two wins at Edmonton and the guy who's powered by Honda this weekend, Scott Dixon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's also a very good choice and very possible. So this track has been very, very kind to the big boys of the series.
It has. And I just think that Honda's going to have something special for that track. There's so many really long straightaways for it to get it single turbocharger spooled up nicely, and that's been the spots where Honda's really been strong this year. So
I also think this course is going to be a lot racier than we saw even last year. I just think that there's going to be plenty of opportunities for passing, and I think we're in for a really good one. So certainly excited to be covering it in person. So I hope it's a really good one. So
yeah, well, we'll be excited to follow your coverage. You'll be posting to IndyCarAdvocate.com and anywhere else,
yeah.
Zach, or can we find all of
you? Yeah, that's right. Well, you can go to IndyCarAdvocate.com for most of the coverage, and I'll probably be doing a couple updates from Edmonton, and then we'll also have some interviews that I'll be conducting there that'll be going on the site in the next week or two as things play out. Also probably be doing a story or two for IndyCar Nation as well from the IndyCar website. So, follow IndyCar Advocate and at IndyCar or at sign, you know, IndyCar Advocate on Twitter. And I'll probably be doing some updates from there too. So, and I'm hoping my phone data plan that I picked is sufficient for my needs. So.
Fantastic. Be careful you don't come home with a $500 phone bill. That's what happens every time we Canucks go south.
Oh, I'm really hoping that's not the case. I think
no.
I've got it sorted, but we'll see.
Good. One more PSA before we go. Just want to point out to fans in the Mid-Ohio area that there is a test happening on July 26th. 18 drivers with 11 teams expected to be in attendance, and it is free to the public. So if you're in the area and you have a Thursday off or can get a Thursday off, head on down and check that out, because you'll have some pretty open access to the paddock, and you'll be very likely to get some up close and personal time with the drivers and teams if you can make the time to get out there. So don't miss it. And then of course after that we are off to Mid-Ohio, the not the immediately following weekend, the one after that, to team up with the ALMS for the doubleheader that we always look forward to so much. And I will be there for that one. So I'm very much forward to that. Yes. Yeah. So lots of people getting out to races lately. Good stuff to see.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Zach, thank you so much for your time, especially given that I know you still need to throw some things into a bag so that you can get yourself on a plane in the morning. So I really appreciate you finding a few minutes to chat with me tonight. It's great to hear from you again, and we'll be glad to have you back sometime.
Oh, thanks, Steph. It's always fun, you know, especially when Paul's a deadbeat and I got to cover for him.
So, I mean, tell it like it is.
Yeah, I got to play on you for an impact, Paul.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And thanks as well to all of you at home listening along. And please always remember that if you need IndyCar news and views, you can get a grip with More Front Wing.